time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, happy Thursday, Houston. We're rolling along. I'm Vanessa Richardson. That is Paul Gallant.
Sup?
Who has his has cat hair on his binder.
Yes, I do. So I have this binder that every single day I write down notes from the show so I remember what I said, because I don't ever. I leave the building and I totally forget what I said the day before. It allows for hypocrisy and flip-flopping. It's very ideal for sports talk radio.
But there's cat hair is the point.
Right. I had it in my office open and my cat decided to sleep on it for like 6 hours yesterday. And when a cat sleeps somewhere, I mean, you don't move them from the spot. But yeah, I opened up my binder and all of a sudden there's cat hair everywhere. So apologies, Joel Blank. Please don't stab me when you come in later.
You're a cat guy. We had a cat once.
What's wrong with that?
I had one cat. I'm a dog person, but I had one cat that I loved.
And he died because...
My cat, she died because she got old. She lived a long time, though.
That's what they do. They hang around.
A long time.
They really hang around.
Carlos Correa didn't hang around.
Boom. What a transition. But he's not dead.
He's
like
not, Carlos Correa, not dead, just with the Minnesota Twins.
Which is almost like being dead.
For whatever reason, chose Minneapolis.
Carlos, what the hell?
But, you know, when there's a breakup of any sort in life, whether it's friendship, leaving a job, a romantic relationship ends, there's always two sides to every story.
Yes.
And we are seeing the proverbial two sides of every story play out in real time. I wouldn't say this is like a big controversy, but it is notable for Astros fans because they're wondering, you know, we heard it all of last year. Pay that man, Jim Crane, open your wallet, pay Carlos Correa. I actually understand why Jim Crane didn't want to do a 10-year deal that's backloaded with a star that's injured all the time. Love Carlos Correa, but that's a lot to ask. However, the difference has been, and the inconsistency from the two sides has been, who actually spoke last. Carlos Correa yesterday told ESPN's Marley Rivera, quote, the club did not make any offers after the lockout, meaning he was essentially ghosted, and that's what John Granato had reported as well here. James Click said that's not the case.
James Click, though, gave an answer where you could interpret it a variety of different ways. You could interpret it like that, where it wasn't the case, or you could say he didn't say anything with this answer.
Okay, so what's the quote?
The quote, the first one, and this was in an interview with MLB.com and Brian McTaggart. What was your pursuit of him like? Did you feel in the race at the end? And he loves to say this one term, quote, we were engaged throughout the process. It's always hard to know, you know. Are you in it or are you not in these types of negotiations? One phone call can change anything. Again, we were engaged throughout the process.
It doesn't tell you much.
It doesn't. And it feels like a carefully crafted answer, Vanessa, because the very next question that Click answered from McTaggart, did you make him an offer post-lockout? Mm-hmm. Quote, I don't want to get into too many of the details about the back and forth of it, except to say, can you guess what he said? We were engaged throughout the process.
Yeah, so to me, that says that Carlos Correa could be telling the truth and that they actually did not reach out to Scott Boras after.
I think he is telling the truth and that this is the carefully crafted answer that the Astros Brain Trust thought up and decided that this was what they were going to say publicly when they were finally confronted.
Shout out to PR. Shout out to Gene. Shout out to Anita. Shout out to the Astros PR team. But that is a very PR answer.
But also finger pointed at Jim Crane, who probably said, we have to find a way to tell people why we did not decide to match an offer that, based off of anybody with eyeballs, would be easy to match for the Astros. Because it's a 3-year deal with opt-outs the first two. Sure, high salary for this season, but you're really telling me Jeremy Peña is someone you're comfortable with at shortstop? I don't buy it for 1 second. But guess what? They were engaged throughout the process. And that might be my new line going forward, Vanessa. You know, if I forget to do something, hey, Paul forgot to send the show prep email out last night, which happened. Well, I was engaged throughout the process. You know?
Yeah, you were engaged. I mean, it didn't get sent, but it was engaged.
But it did it eventually at 9:45.
And
it got
you were
sent.
Engaged throughout the process.
Throughout the whole process. Last night, you know, too, didn't send out my show notes so that you guys can read them and say, like, oh, Paul's crazy today. Maybe I should trigger him with this. But I was engaged throughout the process.
You were. Okay, so we think James Click may be the one that isn't being as truthful in Carlos Correa. Here's the thing. Are Twins fans even excited for Carlos Correa?
I mean, they have to be.
How many Twins fans do you know?
Well, that is a great question.
Like real Twins fans, not like people live in Minneapolis and they catch a game every now and then. Because I know actual like Vikings fans.
You're from the Midwest.
Yeah.
I'm really thinking. I actually don't know a Twins fan.
A single Minnesota Twins fan.
I do know at least one Viking fan, but they are not from Minnesota. They're from Syracuse, New York. Yeah. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
I haven't seen a single diehard on Twitter. I mean, I'm sure if we search for it, you could see. But
they're there, and I want to give a shout out to the fine people over at Apollo Media because
I love Apollo.
One person, Apollo Colin, he went through Twitter and the reaction to the Twins signing Correa. And he found a bunch of people, and the answers that they gave, like the back and forth, the difference, the flip-flopping, isn't that hilarious to read. But he found a bunch of Twins fans that were like, every single Astro who cheated should be sent to jail and dismembered, drawn and quartered. And then they're like, oh, Carlos Correa, yeah, because this is...
You saw the same thing with George Springer. You saw the same thing with A.J. Hinch. Everybody was so mad at the Astros for cheating, but when A.J. Hinch went to Detroit... They welcomed him with open arms.
Yep.
George Springer makes his move. That fan base acts like it's the best thing that's ever happened.
When you go to a dying Rust Belt town, although Minneapolis is not that, but when you go to the Midwest and you're on one of these teams that have been an afterthought in baseball for a long period of time, yeah, you're gonna change your mind a little bit. You know, to your point, do you know a Twins fan? Another question. When's the last time the Twins ever made a signing like this in free agency?
Yeah.
The Twins were always, I remember growing up watching baseball, the Twins and the A's were always pretty good, but you never took them that seriously because you knew they weren't going to spend as much as the Yankees, as much as Boston. You know, it was always those two teams you felt like, okay, these are the two dangerous teams in the American League. And of course, every now and then you had like, the White Sox who obviously beat the Astros in the World Series and a couple of other teams that'll pop up out of nowhere. But for the most part, you were like, okay, the Twins and A's will consistently be out of the playoffs in the first round because the Twins also, like the A's, never spend any money. This is them actually spending money, and I think someone termed it as this is the biggest signing in Twins history.
That could be. 4141 from the text line says, hey, real Twins fan here. We are all very excited about Correa. 4141, shout out to you. Thanks for listening.
Of course you are. I don't blame you for being excited
about
it.
Yeah, I just don't know that many of you exist. 4518 says, the Astros aren't always straight with the media. Remember how they were saying Lance McCullers Jr. and Myers might be back on the field for the World Series? Where are they now? True. I think part of that is...
How about Roberto Osuna?
Optimism that they would be back. Like we've talked about, Lance McCullers Jr. is just always very positive, it's going to happen.
I think injuries are different too, because if you're in a position where you're being asked about somebody else's injuries, what can you really say? Hey, we hope he's back. Team doctors are going to advise him to be back by a certain date, but they're of course biased. The players' individual doctors are probably going to say something entirely different. So when it comes to injuries, I never buy anything that any coaches or general managers are saying 100% because they're always going to choose the glass three-quarters full approach. But in this situation, if we're looking at what James Click has to say about the lack of communication that we all seem to believe happened between the Astros and Correa at the very end, we were engaged throughout the process. I'm telling you, you guys can use this excuse wherever you want going forward. You know, you got an assignment you're supposed to do.
So
but
I
was engaged throughout
things,
the process.
If I want to end things with a guy, I can just say, listen, I was engaged throughout the process.
Yeah. Although, if you say you were engaged throughout the process, does the person get confused and say, wait, we were engaged?
Yeah,
what?
That's true.
I don't know.
So don't use that with relationships.
But it could work for forgetting to, oh, honey, I forgot to take out the trash, but I was engaged throughout the process.
The most open general manager in Houston may be Rafael Stone. When you look at what they will reveal,
they should be. Rafael, they suck.
Rafael will at least give you a little bit of peek behind the curtains and peek behind the scenes of what happened. I will say this, when everything was going down with John Wall and we were like, will he play? Will he not play? I didn't like Rafael's answer that they had gone to three different restaurants and that they had talked about why John Wall not playing was the best thing for both teams. I thought it was insane. I think it's the biggest waste of money. However, at least Rafael Stone told us that happened.
When you're an embarrassing franchise, That's what the Rockets are right now. No offense. I mean, there's some signs of life, you know, with Jalen Green, but you saw them last night against the Mavericks just getting absolutely bodied. They play real teams. They're going to lose. When you're a franchise like that, you have to be transparent. I mean, it's one of the reasons that it's a little frustrating from time to time hearing from Nick Caserio. And Nick Caserio is great at just talking around, talking about anything.
He wears really great vests.
Listen, vests, I've come around on vests. Living in Seattle, you realize, you know what? It's never cold enough to need a coat, but it's always cold enough to need a vest. In the situation of Caserio and with the Rockets, those teams, because they are what they are, should be as transparent as possible. I can understand the Astros thinking to themselves, yeah, we can get away with this. We still have goodwill. But we were engaged throughout the process. It's hard to believe that, especially when you're saying that over and over again in an interview.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. Paul has an interesting comparison between the Astros and a certain NFL team. Of course, we're not talking about the Texans. We're talking about one much more successful. That's next.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant is sitting next to me, and we got Noah behind the glass producing for us today. We'd love to hear from you. Twitch us, text us, call us, tweet us, all of the things. The word dynasty, powerhouse, all of that is thrown around a lot. We heard it, I think, a little bit prematurely with the Kansas City Chiefs after they had only won one Super Bowl. Obviously, Pat Mahomes got that sweet new deal. They've been to two, but they've only won one. The Astros, Paul Gallant, has an argument in a similar situation.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at both of these teams. So the Chiefs have been to the AFC Championship game the last 4 years. They have been to two Super Bowls. They have won one of them. The Astros have been to the last five American League Championship Series. They've made it to three World Series. They also have only won one of them. And this week, we both saw Carlos Correa leave the Houston Astros for the Minnesota Twins. Obviously, we were just talking about that. And the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill, who once said that the Chiefs would win seven Super Bowls with him on the team. They traded him to the Miami Dolphins so he can get a new contract. And my question is, going forward, who's in the better situation? Who's in the better spot right now? Because both of these teams, I think, are not necessarily at a crossroads. I miss my Uncle Charles.
Are we both Thugs in Harmony?
Yes, we are, obviously. And I asked this on Twitter, and it's an interesting split. 52% with 56 votes saying Astros, 48% saying Chiefs. Because, you know, going forward for Kansas City, you still got Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that's the great equalizer. You're always going to be in contention with that guy under center. But the Astros, okay, you're starting to see some of these guys leave. So who's in the better spot going forward between these two teams?
I think the Chiefs. I'd love to say the Astros, but I think the Chiefs, because they have the most important position in the NFL locked up, and that's obviously quarterback. The Astros no longer have Springer, Correa, and we do not know what Verlander is going to do. He hasn't played in 2 years.
We don't know. Right.
I mean, we don't know what Lance McCullers is going to do. He says there's going to be no surgery, but he also said that he would be ready to pitch in the World Series. And now we are deep into spring training and he's not ready. So the Astros still have a lot of upside. They still have absolute game changers. Jose Altuve, that kind of goes without saying. And I think that they have a lot of guys that are solid, but the Chiefs have the most important position on their roster filled, and that's Patrick Mahomes. Even without Tyreek Hill, I think it's the Chiefs.
Fair points, and you might think I'm pandering right now, but I'm saying it's the Astros going forward.
Really?
And I'm saying it mainly because of what Kansas City has to deal with. Okay, I am not sold that the Chiefs' offense is going to be the same without Tyreek Hill anymore. I feel like they lost a fear factor. This is like the Empire in Star Wars losing the Death Star. That's what Patrick Mahomes and Tyreek Hill together are. It is going to strike at any moment and any time, planet-destroying capabilities. Now you don't have that anymore. Now also factor in how much better the AFC West is. The Raiders are already pretty good against the Chiefs for some reason. I can't explain it. Maybe it changes with Josh McDaniels.
It's kind of like when the Jags host the Colts.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
This was a team, though, that scrapped its way to the end of the season, made the playoffs, and they added this offseason Devontae Adams. They also added Chandler Jones, which is being forgotten. Chandler Jones is a hell of a pass rusher, and that's a guy that I would absolutely want chasing after Patrick Mahomes. By the way, where did he go to college? I can't remember. Off the top of my head, Chandler Jones. Where did he go? He went to Syracuse. And on top of that, in the AFC West, we also have Vanessa.
I went to Syracuse.
Oh, I'm rich. Oh.
Shoot, I don't have a response to that. So also in the AFC West, you've got Russell Wilson joining the Broncos, competent team. And the Chiefs own the Broncos every single year. And plus the Chargers, I mean, they added J.C. Jackson. That's going to make things a lot more difficult for Kansas City.
So it's competition for you more.
Right, the competition for Kansas City right now. Like, I don't think it's a certainty, an absolute certainty. It's close to a certainty that the Chiefs make the playoffs this coming year. Where with the Astros, look, I think that with the AL West the way that it is, the Mariners are going to be a little bit tougher this year. I know John Granato has been saying that a lot on the bench. And I agree with him. Like, I watched this team firsthand. They are on the rise. But the Angels, I never take them seriously. The Rangers, they just spend a bunch of money. I don't know that that's going to really lead to any differences. And the A's just quit. So I feel like the Astros are in a better spot just where they are in the American League. Who are they competing with? It's really like Toronto, because of what Toronto has done this offseason. I'm not really taking New York that seriously. I guess it's Boston. I don't think that the Astros have as much to compete with around them as the Chiefs do. And not just the AFC West, but also the entire AFC, which is a much more difficult conference now.
Former Jets linebacker Bart Scott yesterday, on NFL Network actually said he does not think that the Chiefs make the playoffs. He said the Bengals, the Broncos, the Bills, and the Colts will win their four AFC North, South, East, and West divisions respectively. He said the Browns, the Chargers, and the Ravens could make the playoffs as AFC wildcard teams. The AFC is going to be weird, and that's why. When, you know, look, as much of a fit as Aaron Rodgers threw, as much of a diva as he was smart to stay in the NFC.
He was. I mean, I really think that the Titans should have gone all in to get Aaron Rodgers, especially if there was some rumblings about him maybe wanting to go there. But, yeah, I mean, this conference has, I would say, 11 playoff contenders. And I heard the bench talking about that this morning. AFC East, I guess you take the Dolphins more seriously now, Patriots and Bills. AFC North, what team do you not take seriously there? I guess the Steelers are the worst team, but the Bengals obviously were in the Super Bowl. The Browns have Deshaun Watson. The Ravens were so injured last year. Then you have the AFC West. Every team in that division you're taking seriously. The only division that you're like, it's the AFC South. But the Titans and Colts, at the very least, are playoff competent. It's a difficult conference, and we all see what can happen in the playoffs every single year, and now the Chiefs don't have Tyreek Hill. I think the Astros are in a better spot.
The Twitch line says, probably Astros. Minute Maid is a pretty cool stadium. Arrowhead is noisy and cold. The weather thing, I think it's a little bit overplayed in the NFL, but that's actually not a terrible point, that even environment-wise, the Astros are in a little bit of a better spot. Yeah, that's a really, really good question. I'm interested to see what people have to say about that. Steelers are the worst team, but they never have a losing record. True. AFC is going to be brutal. Speaking of AFC South, I was thinking about this earlier because out of all of the AFC South could be the easiest road to the playoffs as far as division goes.
Oh, yeah, it sucks.
Who is more likely to win the AFC South now that you're seeing the pieces in place, the Titans or the Colts?
I still feel that it's the Colts. I know we touched on this a couple of days ago in that, hey, like where do you think now the Colts go with Matt Ryan? I think that the Colts took a slight leg up on Tennessee. But I do think Tennessee is a deeper team. I just wonder, what happens this coming season? They were so tough last year. I mean, they dealt with so many injuries, and they still had the one seed in the conference. Does that depth that they have, some of which they lost in free agency, I think they're going to miss Deontay Foreman, interestingly enough. Is that depth enough to make up for, I think, a inequality in quarterback? I'm not the biggest Matt Ryan fan, but I would much rather roll the dice with Matt Ryan going forward. I know what Ryan Tannehill is. Ryan Tannehill is not getting you to a Super Bowl. Ryan Tannehill can be on a team that gets you to a Super Bowl, I guess, But I think we saw the furthest that the Titans can go with Tannehill under center is the AFC Championship game a couple of years ago, where guess what? They lost to the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think it's probably the Colts by a little bit, but I think a lot of it depends on Derrick Henry's health. If we see Henry, if we see vintage Derrick Henry, like Derrick Henry the first couple years he was in the league, the foot is great. We've brought up foot injuries and how tough they are to come back from.
He's a big dude, too.
He's huge.
You know, it's a lot of weight that he's putting on that foot every single time he takes a carry. It is a lot of, I think, uncertainty, more than we would, I think, admit when it comes to him. He didn't look good against the Bengals in that playoff game. You know, I remember they gave him the ball on, what was it, 4th and 1 at the 1-yard line. And he's never been very good at those goal-to-go situations. I think there was a game against the Cardinals at the beginning of this year where they handed the ball off to him 2 or 3 times and he got stuffed on all of them. But, I mean, he was not in that game against the Bengals anything close to the Derrick Henry that we remember. And if he's not that, I mean, yeah, you're going to make up for Ryan Tannehill? How? What are you going to do that's going to make things better for you? I just don't see it.
Coming up on Vanessa and Glott, we're going to play an interesting game. Bigger game changer in the NFL. Paul, over the last week, we've seen some really week and a half crazy offseason moves. We've seen Russell Wilson head to the Broncos. We've seen Matt Ryan head to the Colts. So we're going to take a look at some of these free agents and trades that have happened and compare positions. Who is going to be the bigger game changer in the NFL when it comes to specific situations and positions? And we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes. So stay tuned on Vanessa and Glott, 92.5 and ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Glott on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Glott.
I'll tell you, when that song started playing at the Super Bowl halftime show, when Dr. Dre sat down and started playing this on the piano.
Hype.
Yeah, that was pretty sick.
It was unbelievable. One of the best halftime shows ever. All right, a huge offseason in the NFL so far. People have been talking for weeks just about how absolutely crazy it is. Not only do you have the quarterback situation, but you have really unexpected moves. Devontae Adams certainly falls in that category. Tyreek Hill. There are some free agents that we probably saw happening. I don't know that I thought Carson Wentz would be traded to the Commanders, but that happened. So who is going to make a bigger splash and the biggest splash when it comes to some of these moves that have been made on their new teams? We know the AFC is wild, in particular the AFC West. So let's start with a little Tyreek Hill or Devontae Adams. And again, we want you guys to let us know your opinions on this. Who is going to make the biggest immediate impact on their new team, the Cheetah or Devontae Adams?
Wide receiver is such an interesting position because you are entirely reliant on your quarterback. So while I think Hill is just completely different from every wide receiver in the NFL because of that speed, laterally, vertically, he's either working with Tua Tagovailoa or Teddy Bridgewater. Sorry, this is a no-brainer. Devontae Adams and Derek Carr are best friends.
I go with Adams, too.
They play together at Fresno State, and Adams can do just about everything. Hill, not to say that he isn't exactly the prototype at wide receiver, but he isn't. And if you're trying to throw him the ball when he has someone actually on him occasionally, which does happen from time to time, he's not somebody that's going to be able to, you know, body that guy off. Yeah, I think it's going to be Adams because, look, I mean, Derek Carr had a pretty good season last year, all things considered, and now all of a sudden, yeah, this is his best friend. This is fantastic for
when
the
you
Raiders.
Look at the chemistry that they had at Fresno State. When you look at the fact that I think Derek Carr personally was heading for the trading block, possibly to the Colts, before Devontae Adams decided to come. And then obviously that didn't happen. And you heard Devontae Adams saying something like, I owe Derek Carr a Ferrari or something for bringing me here. I mean, they have immediate chemistry. Now, Tyreek Hill obviously has the history of making the faster plays, being, you know, having the bigger plays under his belt, and Devontae Adams is definitely more of a route runner. But I think it's Devontae Adams, especially with this Raiders resurgence and the excitement of being there in Vegas.
Yeah, you mentioned that with Derek Carr, how his future was 100% uncertain not too long ago. I mean, How happy are you if you're Derek Carr right now? You're not getting moved from one franchise to another. You're not getting broken up with by your franchise. I mean, you're actually being shown some respect. And honestly, after the last couple of years dealing with John Gruden, who I've always found to be a bit of a hack.
Insufferable.
Yeah, I think Gruden, look, I know he's not Urban Meyer, but I thought there were some real Urban Meyer similarities to him coming out of the broadcast booth with some of the things that he was doing, with the late season collapses that the Raiders were having under his watch. And it felt like he was the one that was constantly putting the blame at the feet of Derek Carr as opposed to him. So now, no more John Gruden, Devontae Adams in the house. You got Josh McDaniels working with you, who definitely as a head coach has a lot to prove, but as an offensive mind certainly doesn't.
That's a great point.
Yeah, I'm curious. This is going to be a fun Raiders team.
Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson? Now, I will say this, because the question I initially asked was who makes the bigger initial impact. Let's pretend for a second that Deshaun Watson is not getting suspended, because we don't know that he is. Because if that were the case, then the obvious answer would be Russell Wilson. But assuming that Deshaun Watson doesn't miss any time, hypothetically, who is going to make the bigger impact? Will it be Russell Wilson with the Broncos, or will it be Deshaun Watson with the Cleveland Browns?
I'm curious as to how you feel about this, because this is a tough one. You know, I think your initial question actually does make sense from this perspective. Deshaun Watson, now and going forward, I feel like there's more upside. With Russell Wilson, right now versus the end of this coming season and going forward, I really wonder what kind of a player he is going to be. Because we saw signs of decline the last couple of seasons. I saw them firsthand. And while I think that early on, I think the Broncos are probably going to start off the year like 6-0 or something like that. They're just going to be an absolute wagon coming out. Is he going to be able to make it happen for the entirety of the year? Because that's what's funny. Watson might come off a suspension, and all of a sudden the Browns, they start surging up, and the Broncos start surging down. So I'm torn on this one. I guess if I have to pick, gun to my head, I'm going to say Watson.
Yeah, me too. I'm going with Deshaun, because we're going to see what he can do with a roster that's almost complete and that looks really, really good, where he has a lot of weapons. Look, all the respect in the world for David Johnson, Brandon Cooks, Philip Lindsay, Rex Burkhead. I guess he didn't play with Rex Burkhead.
We don't need to give him all the respect in the world.
Yeah, because Davis Mills was the one playing with
David
some of those
Johnson.
Guys,
but
you know, those moments where he would connect with DeAndre Hopkins, those big moments, I do think we see more of them. He is a smart coach. Kevin Stefanski has a great offensive mind. He is a general manager who is not going to make irrational, brash, emotionally charged decisions. He has Andrew Berry instead of Bill O'Brien. So I think that the answer to the initial question of who makes the immediate impact would have to be Russell Wilson by default,
right?
Because I think Deshaun probably will have some sort of suspension. If there's no suspension, I think it's Deshaun Watson. Now the question could become, I think Deshaun Watson is going to be quote unquote well rested after a year off and have a lot of gas in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
Some people say he's going to be rusty.
Yeah.
That's a huge question.
I mean, it's a new offense, and sometimes it takes a quarterback a little bit of time to learn a new offense, especially if he's going to have to be away from the team for potentially half of the year. You know, this is awkward where whoever's under center in the short term, I guess it would be Jacoby Brissett. You've got receivers with you that are working with you. And I mean, you're not really building towards anything. You're just kind of, you're just trying to stay afloat over that entire period of time. By the way, I want to go back to you talking about you basically just bless your hearts to the Texans running back. It was very polite. I thought it was very nice the way that you did it. Oh, bless your heart.
Nothing but respect in the world.
David Johnson, bless your heart.
2016 fantasy football roster that was
Texans.
9491 on the text line says, you mean signs of decline with Russ like Tom Brady showed before he changed teams? Russ is still excellent.
Yeah, you didn't watch him, so.
Russell Wilson is not Tom Brady also, so.
Yeah, I mean, look, I watched Russell Wilson for 2 years. Watch his mobility. It's not the same. His mobility is a big part of what makes him who he is, because he is not somebody that easily sees routes over the middle of the field. He's just not. That's what happens when you're 5'11". But it's also because he has
Mr.
an addiction.
Unlimited.
Oh, God. He is addicted to plays downfield.
Yeah.
Like and Mahomes has the same problem, and a lot of quarterbacks, I think, do. When things are starting to get a little bit quagmired, he will default to, I'm going to bomb it downfield. and it was a bad habit the last two seasons. This was, look, Brady was showing signs of decline, no doubt about it, and he was better in Tampa Bay. But Brady is not a quarterback whose ability is based off of his athleticism in any way, shape, or form. Where with Russ, I mean, we have seen the track record for relatively mobile quarterbacks for a long period of time. Wilson is honestly the one that has lasted the longest. But for the most part, they seem to have a short shelf life. Cam Newton, Colin Kaepernick, Robert Griffin III. Michael Vick's a different story because he went to jail. But the really mobile quarterbacks historically have not lasted that long. And I'm wondering about it with Russ because you're finally starting to see guys who he used to put in on skates doing these figure eight loop-de-loops in the behind the line of scrimmage. He's not doing that the same way that he used to.
There's a big age difference and a big potential difference in the trending upwards versus trending downwards. All right, you're listening to Vanessa and Gallant. We are talking about the bigger game changers in the NFL based on some of these offseason trades and, of course, just free agent moves in general. Matt Ryan or Carson Wentz, who has the chance to make the biggest immediate difference and impact? Would it be Matt Ryan with the Colts or Carson Wentz with the Commanders?
Carson Wentz is going to help you tank, right?
No shocker, I'm going to go with Matt Ryan here. Now, listen, Matt Ryan is not a long-term solution. Matt Ryan is a solid quarterback who can probably help them get to the playoffs in the way that Carson Wentz crapped the bed when they had a 90% chance of making the playoffs, and then they lost to the Raiders and the Jags.
The defense kind of crapped the bed in those
the
games,
defense,
though.
Yeah, the defense, I think the Colts defense needs, I will say this, probably more work than people are saying it does. But I still think Matt Ryan has the chance to, when you look at the fact that the AFC South is not good and is the easier route to the playoffs, Matt Ryan has the chance to make that impact to where we've seen Carson Wentz in big moments, and he does not step up.
How about this as a question? Will Matt Ryan make the Colts better, or will Carson Wentz make the Commanders worse?
Okay, so if we're talking about the bigger game changer and not in a positive way, if we're talking about who will change the game for the worse.
We're talking about making differences, but we're talking about, is Carson Wentz as much of an anchor as Matt Ryan could be your ticket to heaven?
No, because I think they just put the backup in if Carson Wentz is, you know.
Oh, yeah, they do have Taylor Heinicke.
Yeah,
right.
I think they just end up putting Heinicke in.
Forgot about that.
And he's probably Matt Ryan. Coming up on Vanessa and Glott, we'll continue this discussion. We're also talking about the possible return of a certain NBA player due to some vaccine mandates. And then happy birthday to the greatest. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Vanessa and Gallant continues on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, the vaccine mandates have changed the game of sports as far as who's allowed to play where. A lot of it is dependent on which city you're in, who is in charge. Paul knows this, and I don't do politics, so you're not going to hear my opinion on this, by the way. But Paul lived in Seattle.
Good God, what a nightmare.
I should say I don't talk about politics on air would be a better way of saying that. I didn't want to sound ignorant.
You're just like, Vanessa's like, hey, Paul, go end your career right now.
Right.
Go on a rant. And I could.
You could.
If I
Chill
could,
dog.
Then I would.
Chill dog?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, come on. I'm just kidding. That moment is honestly, in retrospect, hilarious to me, even though, you know, I got like death threats. No big deal. Seattle was very strict. And mm-hmm. Seattle, I think, just last week, like, stopped making people wear masks. But in New York, there has been this rule that makes absolutely no bleeping sense. And part of me kind of liked it because I was like, oh, guess what? The Yankees might not be able to play games at home if they have unvaccinated players. That's kind of funny to me if Aaron Judge or someone who maybe isn't vaccinated wouldn't be able to play because of this rule that's so bleeping stupid. So essentially, if you are a person who works in New York City, you have to be vaccinated whenever you go to work.
Okay.
And this includes basketball players, Kyrie Irving. It also includes singers and things like that. But if you are not from New York, you can come in, be unvaccinated, and play. It's just mind-numbingly stupid, inconsistent, and these are the things in life that, Vanessa, drive me crazy. But Kyrie Irving is going to be back, probably as soon as, I think officially today, with the Brooklyn Nets to playing every single game. And Kyrie Irving scored 60 points a couple of games ago. I am pumped about this because you know why? James Harden's going to be sweating. James Harden, if he had been a little bit patient, if he had taken a look at the news and realized everything seems to be calming down on the COVID-19 front, he would be playing with a team that when in the 18, I think, games that they played together, Kyrie, Durant, Harden, they were unstoppable. They really were. Like, there was no team that was beating them. Then they all got injured in the playoffs, and did I low-key say, like, yeah, it's because of that? I can't say. What I can say is that that team...
Paul Gallant cheers for people to get injured. Yikes.
I mean, listen, I didn't want them to win.
Right.
By any means necessary. Does that mean I'm going to hell? Possibly. Look, it was an unholy marriage. It was an unholy three-way, but at the same time, they were terrifying. Now... you got Durant and Irving and a team that's not that very, very good around him versus Harden and Joel Embiid. I can't wait for the possibility of this series. It needs to happen, Vanessa. I want to see Harden shrink in this moment because I know he will.
Well, you and I are alike in that we don't like James Harden and we didn't like his antics and his attitudes and the way that he exited Houston for sure and then tried to act like nothing had happened. My whole thing with the vaccine mandate in sports is just looking forward to how it can impact the play on the field. We know that there was, did you see on Twitter yesterday, I guess Mets owner Steve Cohen had donated like millions of dollars to the Democratic Party. And so people started talking about that and how it would impact.
He's a hero.
Things get so messy when you look at the fact that sports owners are billionaires and how much impact they have over lawmakers who usually are millionaires.
Yeah.
So they actually have an upper hand.
They get that bag.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what shape Kyrie Irving is in once he's playing full time. We saw when he dropped 60. Again, we go back to the Deshaun Watson question of having to sit out. Sometimes it doesn't make guys rusty. Sometimes they have a lot of gas in the tank.
Yeah, and look, we'll see when Watson comes back. I just think there's the other obstacle of learning that offense. I mean, what do you do during training camp? I remember when Tom Brady was going to be suspended for the first four games of the, the 2017 season? Was it the 2016 season? Whatever the case. When he was going to be suspended those first four games.
For Deflategate?
Right. They were giving the majority of the reps to Jimmy Garoppolo in practice, like first team reps, because they were like, hey, well, he's going to be playing to open the season. You're not. And I think that did rub Brady the wrong way, because I remember in that documentary that was out a couple of weeks ago, he mentioned it. He brought it up. I mean, if you're the Browns, you're in a tough spot there because you want to win those games before Deshaun Watson comes back from the suspension that we all assume he is going to get. But you also need to give him as much time as you possibly can to get up to speed, learn what Stefanski likes, learn what his wide receivers can do, what they like, what they don't like. You're also breaking Amari Cooper into this team as well.
Yeah, they have new pieces. Does Deshaun Watson strike you as somebody that needs like a total like training though?
Well, what do you mean? Like,
he's going to need to learn the offense and whatnot. But you don't think it's almost like something where he can kind of plug and go in some ways?
He is really talented, you know. And this is not me also suggesting like he's not. This is difficult. I think because you don't know the person's working habits unless you're there firsthand. But no one's ever said anything bad about Deshaun Watson's work habits. You know, this isn't like Johnny Manziel or something like that. So I would assume that he would be able to pick things up pretty quickly, but I can imagine the first 2-3 weeks or something like that. Say you're a gambling person and you see the Browns are favored in a game because Watson is back. I would probably think about taking the team that they're playing against to cover in every single one of those games because I think it'll be rusty for a couple of games. But once it all gets rolling, I mean, we saw it here, you know, when he was just a rookie, it took him like 3 games, but by the third game, it was pretty terrifying to see how good the guy was. You know, it was the first game. He came in against the Jaguars. Second game, he played against the Bengals, and he had the long touchdown run. And the third game was where he went, to an extent, toe-to-toe with Tom Brady. He played really well in that game.
Speaking of Tom Brady,
He's
not the greatest ever. It's Peyton Manning.
Like, how can you say that with a straight face?
FYI, I'm being sarcastic.
Okay, good.
But today is the day that Peyton Williams Manning turns...
His middle name is Williams?
Yes.
Why not William?
Because Olivia... I think it's his mom's maiden name.
Oh, okay.
Possibly. I think I remember that.
Why not just do William anyway? Like, the S is weird.
Peyton turns 46 today.
Oh, he's 46?
And since I am always and forever team Peyton Manning, and the man beside me is always and forever Team Tom Brady. I'd like to recap my favorite Peyton Manning moments and my favorite Colts moments. I'm sure you'll have something to say about the 2007 AFC Championship game.
Oh, God.
The Colts would go on to win the Super Bowl. 3-yard run by Joseph Addai and Marlon Jackson. He's got it.
Oh,
the interception.
God. I hate you.
The Colts win the Super Bowl. Can I take you back
again? I woke up my parents that day because there was an ottoman in our family room. They were asleep. I was watching that game on TV, and I threw the ottoman. And my parents woke up and were like, what happened? I was like, I'll take whatever punishment I'm supposed to get. Okay? I'm mad. We lost Judgment Day.
Best Brady Peyton matchups. There are a lot of them. Obviously,
yeah, like
that's
one where
one
Manning
of my
threw
favorite.
Four interceptions. That one was great.
My other favorite, November 15th, 2009. This was a week 10. The Colts won by 1 point. That rushing score by Joseph Addai. And then Pat's head coach, Bill Belichick,
went for it.
Infamously goes for it on the fourth down.
That was
the
28-yard
line.
That was the right call.
It was the right call. Explain yourself.
The Patriots were not. That team sucked. They were not stopping Peyton Manning. I remember thinking to myself, this is the right call. And then the next day, everyone was like, you don't go for it on fourth down on your own side of the field. And now all the analytic nerds on Twitter are like, you absolutely do. On your own 1 yard line, fourth and nine, go for it. Because they're all crazy.
So I'm interested in your take on this. What's your opinion on if analytic nerds had been around 10 years ago when all this was happening between Manning and Brady? Because some of the most fun moments are when coaches just go against the grain and go with their gut.
Well, the analytic people would have constantly been talking about how Manning was a better quarterback during the first half of Brady's career because they would have brought up the statistics and all of those things. And they wouldn't bring up, like grit. And like hard work and the Patriot way and just winning. There's no statistic for winning except for the wins and losses. I would hope that they would have some sort of analytical number to explain how Peyton Manning only in the Colts scored 3 points against a team that was like down to its like fifth and sixth cornerback back in 2005. But that's just me. Happy birthday, Peyton Manning.
Happy birthday,
Tom
Peyton
Brady's
Manning.
Better than you.
Thanks for the memories.
Did you know he could have been a Texan?
Yeah, he was past. Ryan Leaf could have been with the Colts.
No, but
what if?
I don't mean like. Well, yeah, I guess that's true. If we want to play the what if game, but it's
but
crazy.
You're talking about when he went to the Broncos.
Yeah,
he was interested in the Texans.
And guess what?
Yes.
Gary Kubiak wasn't interested in him
because of the neck issues, right?
It's such BS that he eventually got to work with Peyton Manning in Denver and won a Super Bowl together.
Gary Kubiak's concern, though, with Peyton Manning's neck was a legit concern.
Oh yeah, nearly headless Manning, nearly headless Nick in Harry Potter.
That was a legitimate concern.
Look at me, my head's.
But
on
you know, it's funny when you look up the best Brady Manning moments. They have one of the Broncos Patriots games, and I always have to remember, he played for the Broncos.
Manning set the record for touchdown passes in a season, if I'm not mistaken, against the Texans. It was at NRG Stadium. And it was like the last game of the year. That was during the Texans' 2013 2-14 season, which was just such a miserable experience. Like, I remember every single moment of it. And I used to have to do this thing, Vanessa, over at the flagship, where they would pay me to essentially write the script for a replay of the game. And this replay of the game would air before my broadcast. So it was like an NFL film style. And the funny thing was, like, the Texans were getting bodied in every single one of these 14 straight losses. So you had to like write a tease going into a commercial break. And the commercial was like, the Texans were down 31-6 1 minute into the first quarter.
Oh, I'm
would
on the
they
edge
come
of my
back?
Seat.
Find out when you return. And eventually I was just like, damn it, man. I don't know how I'm going to do this going forward. That was probably the most difficult job I've ever had, was like trying to like do teases when the Texans were getting bodied in that show.
There were some other good ones, of course. Week 9, 2006 season, Tom Brady throws 4 interceptions, one of his worst starts ever. Yeah. Colts win 27-20. A lot of great memories with that Peyton Manning.
Doesn't matter.
One of those great memories.
He left you for Denver.
He didn't leave Denver. Say cut him.
Yeah, I know. But he left you too, technically. I mean, he's not an all-time Colt.
He didn't leave me.
He's going to retire as a Bronco.
No.
Yeah, he's definitely going to retire
as a
Bronco.
Okay, you know, this
Jim Irsay told him to go bleep himself.
This goes to a larger discussion, though. This goes to a larger discussion about the fact that, like, when players join other teams every now and then, like, I would see pictures of Peyton Manning in a Broncos jersey when people would talk about his Hall of Fame career.
Because he's a Bronco.
He's not a Colt. He was with the Colts for way longer.
He finished his career with the Broncos. He's a Bronco forever.
Also, he's not the sheriff. Don't call him the sheriff.
That was annoying.
Always call him the sheriff.
It wasn't a real nickname. it wasn't a real thing. Tom Brady being the GOAT, that makes sense because he is the GOAT. But Peyton Manning was never the sheriff.
But even that as a nickname isn't that good.
That's true. It's not original.
People used to get mad. I think Mets fans got mad because they would call Tom Brady Tom Terrific because there's some Met pitcher like Tom Seaver something like that. And it's like, who cares? New Yorkers, you always think you're at the center of the world. Tom Seaver sucks compared to Tom Brady. R.I.P.
Different sports, but happy birthday to Peyton Manning, 46 years old. Thanks for all the wonderful memories. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we talk more about the Astros and dive into who's telling the truth. Who's telling the truth? That's next.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.